Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Xfinity Mobile, featuring customized wireless plans. Customers can choose unlimited, buy the gig, shared data, or a mix of both and switch it up anytime. Learn more at xfinitymobile.com.
Welcome to the Nest of Vipers podcast, cultural chit-chat for know-it-alls, ne'er-do-wells, and nattering-the-bobs everywhere. I'm your host, Danny Plotnick, and each week on the show, we bring together an esteemed panel of blabbermouths to riff on some cultural topic of the utmost importance. And today, we're going to talk about customer service, because I think every American, no matter what their age, race, color, or creed, has some customer service nightmare in their past or certainly in their future. Some horrible time on the phone or on the internet in some Kafka-esque bureaucratic nightmare. And speaking of nightmares, today's panel, I've pulled together San Francisco's biggest blabbermouths, put them around one table, and I'll be shocked if anyone gets a word in edgewise. And we're going to start introducing right here. We've got Tony B.
How's it going?
Musician, member of the Hank Four. We've got Bucky Sinister with a brand new book out. All blacked out, nowhere to go. Poems about your punk rock past.
Yes. It's about getting drunk and getting your heart broke.
What makes a poem punk rock?
How fast you read it. Okay. I don't know.
All right, very good. Well, moving right along, we also have Jack.
One person buys it and 25 people ask for a free copy.
All right, and finally we have Jack Blair, author of Sex American Style, Bizarro SF.
San Francisco Bizarro. And a new book about punk rock in the Bay Area.
All right.
Forthcoming.
So we're going to start our stories on, I believe, Christmas morning with Mr. Sinister.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I worked at PlayStation for a couple years.
That's a gaming system, right?
Yes, it's a video game console system.
I've gotten a lot of grief about not explaining all the references on the show. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know what a PlayStation is.
The Footnote podcast.
Well, I'm being kind of low on the totem pole over there on Christmas Day.
What's the lowest you can get at PlayStation?
There's the
stuffing the peanuts in the box or something.
Well, there's
sweeping up.
There's two bottom rung jobs over there. Yeah, there's the testers, right? And a lot of people, like when you're like about 15, this sounds like it's going to be the ultimate job, where it's just like you're playing the same part of the game over and over, looking for glitches and bugs and reporting them. It's just so repetitive; it drives a lot of people crazy, and the hours are really horrible. And yeah, it's just, you know, once you've done it for a while, you get to move up, and then your next job isn't nearly so bad. But that's how they weed out a lot of people who want to go into video game production. The other thing is for the 800 operators, the customer service jobs, that's the other place where you start. And that's the place I was. I wasn't one of the main operators. I wrote a lot of the manuals for them and wrote a lot of the little copy that they would read when somebody would call up with a problem with a game or whatnot. On Christmas Day, it's you know, that's when everybody gets their PlayStations out of the boxes and tries to plug them into the TV and it doesn't work, and everybody is upset, and that's why they put everybody, no matter where you are in customer service, you are on the helplines, on the installation helplines, with people just calling in. They have about an hour and a half wait on Christmas Day to talk to a rep, and that wait lasts for a couple of days, actually. People just calling up, like, all day long. You know, it's just one call after another coming into your headset. People like, you know, I got the PlayStation, and it, you know, I can't get it to work, and how do I do it? And just going over like how to install it, you know, trying to figure out what they're trying to plug it into.
I'm trying to plug it into my toaster. It doesn't seem to work. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people are these like kids or their parents or.
Well, yeah, it's usually the parents. The kids were actually a lot better with it because they knew where all the stuff was. It's like, I need the remote that came with that VCR, and they're like, and the parents were like, I don't know where that comes. And the parents would also say things like they would call like the little controllers, they call them paddles. And they would call the CDs little games. They would call them tapes. We put the tape in the PlayStation. Doesn't work at the paddles. And
whereas the kids going, I need an RJ45 connector, male to female, and isn't in the box.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the kids knew how to work all this stuff, and also you know, it had to say things like, you know, when they were plugging it, trying to hook it into some TV, they're like, well, I don't see that jack in the back of the TV. All we have here in the back of this TV is these two little screws. I'm like, is this TV sitting on top of another TV? Because, you know, it's like, what, you know what I mean? It's like,
that's my house.
Yeah, yeah. You realize that, like, they're trying to plug it into, like, the TV that's in the basement that, you know, that no one's used for a long time. They don't want to plug it into the nice new TV.
It's a 7-inch black and white. The rabbit ears.
Yeah, yeah. And they're just trying to plug it into, like,
you can't plug PlayStation into that?
Well, you can't, not right out the box, you can't just plug it into a 74 Philco.
You know, and a pair of needle nose to change the channel.
Yeah, and just, you know, it's just not made for that. And, you know,
So it's just a whole market right there, right?
Yeah, untapped completely. People with old TVs who want to play video games.
Yeah. Well, there's like little adapters you can get like at Radio Shack. Like that Radio Shack is like the last place that carries like adapters for this kind of thing.
Are you allowed to recommend Radio Shack in your PlayStation position here?
Yeah, I'm not really working for either place anymore, so why not?
Could we do a dramatization? Right now?
Anyone want to jump in? Oh, some role playing. That'd be great. Put you back in the seat. Yeah. You know, it would really be sense memory kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, it would just... There would be
what the hell's wrong with you people? I've been waiting for 95 minutes. My son is crying. He's in tears. He has to play.
Mighty Morphin?
My son wants to wants to kill some hookers in Grand Theft Auto 3, Vice City.
We can't figure out how to name the Christmas. Hookers. We've got to rename the hookers Peaches.
How is this going to be, you know, how's this going to be Christmas if my son can't kill his hookers? You know, and
we can't cut the Christmas ham until the hookers are killed.
Yeah, so
we're waiting for that last hooker scream to come from the TV set.
It was great too. Like a lot of the kids in Daly were from like Daly City. They still lived at home, and so these are the people, a lot of the customer support people, and we had these different like operators who would speak like French, and no one spoke Spanish. We had all these different things or different languages, but they would also came up speaking Hick. They would send him over to me. And that was like, we can't understand this guy. Can you talk to him? And
Southern
like,
accent.
I'm like, yeah, okay, let me get in character.
Little TV out of the car, so
he'd get passed through, and I'd be like, hey, what could I do you for? And they're like, well, I got the game here, and I got the paddles out, and I don't know what I'll do with it. I'm trying to, you know, and it was kind of fine because I could, you know, understand that. And then, like, it was just kind of confusing the kids. Like, we don't even know he's speaking English. Like, this is really...
That's not English, that's American.
A lot of times, too, it would be like one thing they would have to push on like one button, and it's just like, hit.
The power button?
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, that's what we always started with is power button. Reset. Is it plugged in? Is the power light on? And then sometimes it'd be like, you know, you'd hear like, God damn it. Because people have been waiting for like an hour and a half and realize the electrical outlet that in the basement doesn't work. Yeah. Like, that's your problem.
Their Christmas is ruined, right? Until it's up to you to make it right.
Yeah, and then just, you know, or they would hit, like, you know, the auxiliary button on the remote, and that would be the only thing they'd have to do, and you'd hear the PlayStation music in the background. They'd be like, I've tried everything, and I'm like, hit the auxiliary button on your remote. And then they'd hit, and they'd just hear, like, this line of cussing, you know.
No, when people called, were they irate?
Yeah, a lot of people were.
And how did you disarm that?
You treat anger with kindness. Wow. But if someone was a real, like, if someone was a real, like, jerk, it was like... My favorite thing would be, is like, sir, there's no need to yell. And this is great because then the person automatically comes back with, I'm not yelling. It's like, sir, you're going to have to keep your voice down. And then like it makes the people start yelling is what it does.
Of course.
And then after a while, like, you know, I can hit this little button on my phone to get the supervisor to start listening. It lights up on his phone. He starts listening. By then the guys are going, I'm not yelling at you. And like you're just going to have to calm down. I am calm. Just tell me how to turn it.
How many hours did you have to do this at a time?
Oh, it was 8-hour days, you know, for about
eight
a week.
8 hours of listening to that stuff? That's crazy.
Yeah, for about a week through Christmas, and then I'll go back to my regular job. It gets filled up that much because people can't figure it out. And it's funny because in Japan, PlayStation didn't have a customer service department. Because everybody read the instruction book. And everyone
knew it.
Yeah, and if you couldn't figure it out, you got your roommate or your friend to figure it out for you. It's just really kind of funny because, you know, the brass from Japan would come over, like, you know, the big heads of PlayStation would come over, like, why do you need a consumer service department? Why are we paying for this? Like, well, because no one here can read a set of instructions to save their life.
It's American, you know.
Yeah, and they also didn't understand why people would want to admit that they have, like, these old TVs and stuff. It was, like, shameful.
Of course.
Yeah,
you like, why would you just kill yourself?
Yeah, why would you have some old piece of technology like that? Why would you keep it? Like, what, you know, why would you tell anyone that you had it?
Or why would you get the PlayStation but not get a new TV?
It's not a matter of shame. It's just, like, why would you admit to someone you could not complete a video game? Or whatever, because we had like a 900 helpline too, which would actually help you solve the games.
Was that the suicide prevention line for PlayStation?
Oh, well, we did have a lot of irate, upset callers in that way when this one character in this video game dies in the course of gameplay. In Final Fantasy VII, one of the characters dies to save everyone else, and she doesn't come back to life for the rest of the game. And people were just really upset. And we got calls for years about how do you bring Aeris back to life? And it's like, well, you don't.
What's the answer?
You don't. She dies as a part of the plot.
There's no secret code.
She saves the world, you know, by dying, you know. And people just did not want to accept that.
There's no Easter egg where you could, like...
No, there's no way. But that was what always, like, some kid would... Photoshop a scene from, like, he would take some screen grabs and Photoshop a scene of Eris coming back to life and, you know, put it out on the internet on some little game bulletin board. Here's how to do it. And it would be some, like something that would take, like, you know, 25 hours of gameplay just to do the whole quest. And they would get back and it wouldn't work. And then they call us mad. And like, Kaz Hirai, when he found out about all this, who's one of the big heads, he releases press release that said that, you know, the PlayStation 2 would, we were going to try to lure people in emotionally to it. He was talking about the emotion engine is what they were first calling the workings of the PlayStation 2. Because after, like, you know, the whole Final Fantasy VII thing, they made an overt effort to get people emotionally attached to the video
games. By killing off more and more people within the games.
Strangely enough, by making the eyes more realistic. Yeah.
Do they blink?
Yeah, they blink and they just look better. And they said, well, that's one of the big things that they...
the eyes, the heart, the window to, like, the soul.
Yeah, you make,
like,
this total cartoony-looking character, you make the real-looking eyes on it, and people start really associating
all
with
of a sudden
it.
It's better.
Yeah. And when the little characters die, people get really upset. And if you see, like, the Grand Theft Auto games and stuff, like a lot of them can't really... They don't have, like, a realistic look in their eye. So it's kind of easy to run around and kill people in that game.
Yeah, but if they had real eyes that cried,
yeah.
Blood come out of the sockets. Yeah. So do you have any specific memories of some really irate customer or something that you couldn't deal with, or at some point do you pass the calls on?
Oh well, you know, we got bomb threats over there. Some people would call back and get bomb threats. And I think that was just the most irate that they would get when they threatened to destroy the whole company.
You're pretty pissed off when you're kind of calling.
Yeah, I had about three or four a year.
It's because, you know, Eris is dead, man. She won't come back to life.
Oh, there were a couple things. There was a Tarzan game that came out of the kids' Tarzan movie. That one with Rosie O'Donnell doing the monkey voice in there. Do you remember that one?
Rosie O'Donnell as Tarzan?
Missed that one.
Yeah, Rosie O'Donnell's one of the monkeys. Like, Tarzan's best friend. Come on, Tarzan! Like, she had this total accent, like in the jungle. Monkey. Yeah, yeah. Come on, Tarzan! Let's go get some bananas.
Pushy New York monkey.
Yeah, and on that one, there's like the 900 number for game help, and somebody in production was supposed to look at that, and make sure it was right, but. Apparently, there was a couple of numbers that got transposed, and what came out there was a sex number.
So that's all these, not true.
All these kids were calling up the sex line.
Asking for help with their monkey?
Well,
the support person, of a different kind, isn't it?
Well, it was a lot of the kids were old enough to know that it was a sex line, but they weren't really old enough to find one of the numbers on their own, so they're really excited about it. Yeah, well, it was like finding a porno mag in the woods, you know? It's like at that age, you know, and you're like, oh, wow, here's like something I've been wanting to find, but I'm not old enough to get, and now we found one.
So did, like, 1-800, you know, eat my shorts, like, complain, like, or getting all these calls from 13-year-old boys?
Oh, no, it's just like, you know, we got some calls that kind of right away parents calling for their kids for help and hearing that, and they would complain right away. But a lot of the calls we got were, like, a month later when the people's phone bills were coming in, and their kids have been calling, like, 14 times. And, you know, and they're like, every time they had, like, you know, their friends come over, hey, like, call this number and listen to what happens. This is awesome. There was another one. It was a game called Tomba, and we started getting complaints right away. You know, my kid got this game. Like, someone gave it to him as a gift, and we speak Swahili in this house, and we don't think this is very funny. And, you know, that was being the first call we heard. We were like, what? You know, we thought it was somebody, like, prank calling us, you know. Tomba is basically like the F word in Swahili. And
that was the name of a video game.
Yeah, yeah. And so, like, all the Swahili-speaking households were calling up, going, "This is obscene. You shouldn't have that." And
were people, like, actually doing this on purpose, like putting the phone number wrong or naming a game like
this? You can't really tell because, like, these people, like, there's so many disgruntled employees. You don't know who's trying to, like, screw the system.
Okay, that's what I've been trying to get at for the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's like, it's really hard to tell. And it's like, you won't ever really get caught. Like, it's really easy to do, and there's a lot of reason to do it.
What was the Tomba game?
It's a side scroller set in a jungle.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, it's just like Super Mario Brothers.
Everybody,
Super Mario Brothers set in a jungle or something with like a little like jungle guy running around, kind of much like a little Tarzan, like running around swinging on vines, that kind of thing. And
sounds great. How much? $29.95.
Yeah, probably about $4.99 right now.
Was it one of the better side scrollers?
No, it wasn't. I really have to say, it's no Mega Man. I just, you know, it's just no.
So, did you guys have to pull it?
Or
did you
just... No, I'm sorry,
ma'am. Tomba.
I actually came up with a script on that one where we were having a little meeting about, like, you know, what to give out to the reps. And I said that it was made to be alphabetically next to Tomb Raider in the stores. That's all we're trying to do is get a game right next to Tomb Raider. So that's what I wrote up, and as we sent out to all the things, and the parents are pretty pleased with that.
Brilliant. Yeah. That's a good little white lie to get out there. Diffuse.
How much did you get paid for that? What was in it for you?
Oh, geez, $12 an hour.
All right, fantastic.
Yeah.
Did you get free benefits? Did you get free PlayStation?
No, I didn't. Actually, I was contracted there for a couple of years. I never became a full employee.
Well, he did, but his TV was just a Philco 75.
It didn't work when I hooked it up to my Etch-A-Sketch. I don't know what the problem is. It's a brand-new Etch-A-Sketch.
It's brand new.
Yeah. I tried my Magic 8-Ball, too. It didn't work on that either. But, yeah, I was in a contract there for a couple of years and never got made a full permanent employee. And if you're a full permanent employee, they give you a PlayStation. Here you go. You know that the company's making hundreds of millions of dollars every year, and it's just like, hey, if we're working here, here's a $98 piece of plastic. It's like, thanks, dude. Like, you know, how about the dental plan? You know?
This should be a game. PlayStation dental plan.
Well, the game's in Japan.
HMO, it's a side scroller.
You try to arrest an HMO out of your employee. Why don't we move over to Jack?
Yeah, service industry. I was always pretty bad at the service industry. The only job I ever really had at it was when I first moved to San Francisco, I got a job at the Fairmont Hotel, one of the grand hotels of the city.
Up in the top of Knob Hill.
And
cable cars rushing by.
Totally. It was an audiovisual company I was working for, which will remain nameless. You know, they, for some reason, thought I was a sound engineer with a lot of experience, and I'd lied to get this job and said I was. And I wasn't. I didn't really know much at all.
They weren't really wrong in thinking.
No, and so the first thing, I had to do was go into this, like, a completely packed ballroom at the Fairmont Hotel in the middle of this presentation because the sound wasn't working. And I had to go in there, and they all, like, parted, like, the engineer's here. You know, and I'm like,
what was the presentation? Was it like the vice president?
And I'll tell you, it was like a screen as wide as a ballroom with, you know, all guys, you know, and girls sitting at like green tablecloth tables with pitchers of water and yellow notepads. And they were watching a star field, you know, with a 2001 theme. Boom, 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 boom. And at that moment, I walk in the back and I'm like, what in the hell is this? What is this supposed to be? And then there's this giant solar panel that appears and starts rotating on the star field. And then this voiceover goes, FAFCO solar panels, where the future is now. And I'm like, and the sound was going, so I had to sort of take care of that. And I like tweaked it down.
That was feedback?
Yeah.
I wasn't sure.
It was like very intense thing, though, because I didn't know what I was doing. I'd never sat at a mixing board in my life, but I was kind of like, I was, you know, making the face and, tweaking a couple things here and there. And finally it went away and they thought, wow, that guy. All right. So I got hired.
So you lucked into whatever you did, right?
Totally. I didn't care about it.
That's the key. It was a very zen moment.
Okay. Yeah. And, you know, so I ended up going there every day and they made you wear a coat and tie and gray slacks that they would buy for you. And you had to provide your own necktie. And I hated wearing a necktie. So I called on my phone with my parents and I said, if I wear a necktie. And they said, well, we'll send you some of your father's ties. I went, great. So, you know, every day I go to work with a 70s wide, like paramecium design, you know, beaver tail kind of sized tie. And I'd walk around the hotel like that.
With a pretty lady on the underside.
Lit up for Christmas. Yeah. So I would have to go there every day. And all the people who I worked with hated their job as much as I did. Because we were all like flaky little bohemian San Francisco people who had a lot of other things going on at the night and during the evening, playing in bands or making movies or writing or whatever, and nobody was making any money at that, so we had to go work at the Fairmont Hotel, and we had to set up these slides and projection and sound for all these big companies. So these people would roll in, a lot of fraternal organizations, like the Lions Club would come roaring in, and all the guys from Arkansas would have red blazers, all the guys from Oregon would have green blazers, and they would get tanked and have these little presentations, and you'd have to set up the microphone.
Chase each other, those little cars.
Yeah.
Around one of the Fairmont hotels.
They caught one of the lions peeing in the corner. He got so drunk at an event, and he just thought, went behind a plant and peed in a ballroom, and they had to, you know.
That's how we do it in Arkansas. Houseman,
you know. But, like, it's one of those things where, you know, you were talking about, like, you know, once you work in a place.
What's the matter? Is this the women's plant? Why are y'all getting so upset?
This is Arkansas. We do in Arkansas.
This is the men's plant.
Oh. There were many moments like that where you would have to pretend to be interested in this. Like, me and another guy would be sitting there, you know, in the middle of a room. It'd be
dark. You know, the guy be hammering on about their company to the sales reps and their projection wouldn't be working or something. And we'd be in the back of the room going like, you know, Voltaire used to drink 30 cups of coffee a day. You know, oh, wow, did you see Blade Runner last weekend? You know, or like the Dead Kennedys are playing. I mean, it was all this like, who gives a shit about our job, you know? And then the guy would come up and go, the slide isn't working, you know? And you'd have to lie, basically, because the equipment wouldn't work or you didn't set it up right or you didn't know how to set it up right. And one guy actually said to the people once, did you bring the slides through the airport? And the guy said, yeah. And, you know, why aren't they working? And he said, well, did you put them through the x-ray machine? And he said, yeah. And they go like, well, there you go. Gets demagnetized the tone on this. Just somebody else said there was a satellite dish on top of the hotel.
I'm so excited and that we could just like, talk about slide technology today.
I know it's all AV and tech geek stuff. But you know, the fact is, we didn't really know what we were doing. I mean, we were all kind of making up as we went along. I remember mixing sound for Liz Taylor once during a press conference, and she was an hour and a half late. She came stumbling down the stairs, all pilled out. Walter Mondale, the night before he got his ass kicked in the election, was like making a speech, and it was just really sad. You know, working in one of those grand hotels. If you go in during the day, and you're like, wow, this is expensive. Looks nice. Everybody's fancy. But you're behind the scenes in the hallways that stink of coffee. Of like, you know, 80 years of rotted food. One time I took the elevator too far and I ended up on the garbage level of the hotel. And there were standing pools of water.
There's a whole garbage level?
It was,
What's this? Don't press
it. I don't know what level it was, but we went down too far and it was like the bowels, you know? It was like, I expected to see animals, you know, living in there. Yeah, but there was a couple of moments in particular I remember. There was the Shriners annual convention. The guys with the fezes and the little cars, like you said before. And I had to stay there until they were done with their little thing to remove one microphone. They wouldn't let me leave. So I had to sit there and watch this pageant of Shriner machismo, a thousand of them and their wives in this room having dinner. They started with a lot of cocktails. They're all older white people, pasty and chubby from the Midwest, you know, where I grew up.
Montana's not considered Midwest.
No, but people are fat and pasty. Let's just say that.
I consider everything just
between the coasts. Basically,
between the BART station, like between the Pittsburgh Bay Point BART station and Manhattan, everything
it's
in
pretty
the
much
Midwest.
Flyover, you know. So these Shriners, you know, they had a lot of cocktails. They started getting lubed up, and then they were going to have dinner. But first, they showed a film presentation of burn victims because that is their
that gets the party started.
You know, really gross, you know, kind of stuff. But it was all about their burn hospitals that they kept opening around the country. You know, and they're getting more and more and more loaded. And then it was finally time for dinner, and they just like got all soaked up the alcohol, and then they had this presentation afterwards with a little 3-piece band all wearing fezes playing San Francisco, you know, the old people, like 70s, you know, in the band. And then he would introduce the royalty for the year of the Shriners. And I'm sitting up in the balcony just watching this going, I can't believe this even exists, you know. And, you know, a guy backstage on the microphone I needed to, like, get rid of at the end of the night would say, you know, Grand Poobah, Vizier, you know, Luke Ferguson and Lady Denise. And then they would come out and meet and then walk down this gauntlet of old men wearing like uniforms with curved swords that formed this little tunnel.
Canopy.
And then they would walk through it and all the Shriners would go nuts and cheer. And I just thought,
I love the notion that they're drunk and maybe the swords come down. Someone stumbles into something.
I was like secretly hoping something.
A defezzing.
Yeah, somebody would freak out the burn victim thing, you know.
At midnight every year, they'd actually burn a guy.
Yeah,
and
just to
put
show
them in the hospital.
Well, they draw straws, you know.
Yeah, they burn a guy, and
if you cure the disease of burning, the Shriners are really out of business, right? Yeah. So they got to keep that industry alive.
They're true. They don't know. Maybe they drew straws, and the, you know, Shriner chapter with the least amount of funds raised, you know, would have to like sacrifice himself in a big torch bomb in the middle of the Grand Ballroom of the Fairmont. And another one that really flipped me out was a proctologist convention. Guys who'd worked at the company before are like, oh, you got the proctology convention, huh? Have fun, huh? Yes. I go and set up their like big screen projector, which in those days in the 80s were like monstrous.
They have giant fingers that they cross like swords.
They have a giant butt that they walked out of there. Maybe you can get a job there. I mean, you saved the Tomba situation. Maybe you can kind of help spice up their
Proctology support line, you know? I have a light bulb up there. I don't know how to get it out. It's third time this week. I know. So the proctology guys, they're in there sitting at the green tables with the pictures, and the lights dim. And I'm like, okay, here we go. I'm just hanging in the room, make sure it's working out. And it was like, I don't know how many minutes of proctology colonoscopic video of like inside the anal canal footage, you know?
And guys going and talking very matter-of-factly with this laser pointer. And over here you can see this sort of cyst seepage on the right side of the anal,
if you put that on at the same time you put on Dark Side of the Moon.
Oh, man. Awesome. Then you see Wizard of Oz in your mind.
Hey, look, you know.
I'd like to see the PlayStation game, Proctology Exam.
But it's so bizarre because all I wanted to do was puke. You know, this is so disgusting. It was kind of during the era of where we're hearing a lot about Reagan's polyps on his colon, you know. Colons were in the news, you know. These guys were totally straight-faced, like, you know, I was very interested. They're learning the latest techniques of scraping cysts off the side of an anal, you know, passage. And finally the thing
ends. You just
ends.
Like saying anal passage. Is that finally, the third time?
Wasn't that a noir film with Bogart?
Yeah. San Francisco.
It was.
I'm sure they go to the Fairmont at some point.
So at the end of the proctology video, this poor...
all the shots are from the anal perspective, right?
So at the end of the video, whoever was this poor patient, then the camera pulls back on the video, and all you see are, like, you know, the doctor's sheets and the doctor standing around, and his butt is exposed. And someone had pasted a big sign on his ass that said, "The end." And all the doctors crack up laughing. This is like their big, you know, and then they broke for coffee and then got on some buses and went to the Redwoods, you know. But it was
now the Redwoods.
That was kind of
strip club,
you know,
in North Beach.
I lasted about a year, and then I don't know why I quit. I just had to get out of there. But you know, I've never been back.
I don't know why I couldn't do the job. I didn't like it. I don't know why I quit.
Why did I stay so long? That was a question.
I had no idea how to do the work. Why did I quit?
Wearing a tie. Maybe that was it.
When you were done, did you send all the ties back to your dad?
No.
Crushing your parents?
I still have them somewhere. But, you know, I kept the blazers. They bought you a blazer for a while, and we'd use it in theater shows because it looked like, you know, boring business guy. I have a whole bunch of cables and connectors I stole from the company still. Everybody
some
did.
BNCs that you just don't need
totally
anymore?
Work.
Does the BNC, is that even a cable that you need anymore?
We're really in, like, the tech zone here.
And later, Jack spliced together the burn victim film and the proctology film. And sold it to Gibby Haynes. And the Butthole Surfers took it on tour. Yeah. That's the rest of the story.
Tony B, can you take us out of the technology zone?
Yeah, I was just like having horrible flashbacks. I mean, I'm years in the trenches of customer service. First job I ever had was a bag boy at Winn-Dixie grocery store. Then I went on to fast
food.
Sure,
I asked for double bag.
Well, no, I mean, you know, I was, you know, I was basically like a Catholic kid working at a Jewish, you know, in the middle of a Jewish retirement community called Sunrise Lakes, and the women.
Was there a lake there?
There was no lake. It was in the Everglades. It was what used to be the Everglades, but you know,
they drained a lake to put it there.
Sunrise Lake, if there was one.
They probably just put a picture outside of everyone's window. They just taped it to the window of everybody's, you know, little retirement condos. Whenever they opened the curtains, they thought they were looking at a lake. Yeah. It's just a picture.
Well, originally it was called Sunrise Golf Village. That was the original name of the town. And then they dropped the Golf Village, and then they built Sunrise Lakes.
Sunrise,
you know,
Lakes
phase one,
for the sunset
two
of your life.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know. Yeah. And so I worked at the Winn-Dixie that was right next door to Sunrise Lakes phases 1, 2, 3, and 4. And, you know, having to deal.
A lot of Jewish women arguing about double coupons.
You know, the Jewish ladies coming in, like, holding the melted bag of ice cream. They're coming in off, you know, the 95-degree Florida afternoon, and they come in with this bag of dripping goo, and the ice cream was bad. And I'm like, well, ma'am, you know, you know, what do you want me to do about it? You get me the manager! You get me the manager, Sonny! You know, I'm constantly being called Sonny. And
Sonny.
Just having to deal with bagging people's groceries.
You guys sell booze there?
We did actually sell booze.
Yeah, there's a lot of old, sad alcoholics coming in there. Just like never buying food, only buying gin.
No, I think a lot of those people went down to the farm store. It was like a drive through. You could get milk. Milk
they
and
drive,
booze.
They drive up in their rascals.
Didn't have to turn off the air conditioner.
I got out of the grocery biz, but we, you know, and then I went
got
to
out
go
of
work.
The grocery biz. When you're a bagger, are you actually in the biz?
It sounds like you're a kingpin.
No, I was not a kingpin at all, man. Because the kingpins of the store were stock men. I was a bag boy, and then there was the stock man, and the stock men got to date the cashiers, but as a bag boy...
You only got to date the old ladies?
You didn't rate. Yeah, you know, absolutely. You did not.
The silver foxes.
This was well before cougars had any sort of cultural cachet.
Getting any
pre-Golden Girl?
I mean, we're talking like, you know, the 75-year-old ladies with the dark brown leathered, you know, skin in and, you know, with their dripping bag of ice cream, demanding a refund and, you know, having to talk them down. And then you get in trouble with the manager because you hadn't handled the customer service transaction to the...
What's the proper way to handle the melted sack of ice cream?
You know, what do you do? You just go and give them another.
It sounds like a setup of a porn movie, though, doesn't it?
Like, yeah.
Old lady comes in with my ice cream is melted. Cue the wah-wah guitar.
It's the young 15-year-old bag boy.
That's right. These sausages I bought aren't firm enough.
And then the thing, I was working at the store when the hurricane...
The
big hurricane. It was a Gloria. I don't know. This is so big, I can't remember. 83, like
some lady's name.
Like 1982, 83.
That's our generation's JFK.
You know, everybody remembers.
Forget it. Bow your heads, everyone.
Yeah. They do the hurricane warning. The National Weather Service puts out the warning, and then all of a sudden, within 15 minutes of this national,
how does that warning sound?
You know, they get on the, you know, they interrupt all television and radio programming and they come up with the National Weather Service, Hurricane Gloria, you know, and then all of a sudden within 15
minutes. Run for your
lives. Cars are screeching into the parking lot. People are jumping out of the cars, running into the store, and it goes from being this tranquil Sunday morning, you know, with about, you know, 10 people in the store to... All of a sudden, there's several hundred people running through the grocery store, grabbing armloads of stuff and putting in grocery carts, and they're fighting over batteries and cans of Dinty Moore beef stew, and they're slugging it out. It's like pandemonium. It's panic buying. And you're sitting there trying to keep all the shelves stocked, and you're running into the back, and you know people are just completely going nuts. It's like here in San Francisco after the earthquake, people just went and bought booze. You know, there's no way to actually prepare. It just happens, and then you kind of get drunk to deal with it. But
how much warning do you have? On a hurricane warning, like how do you have like 15 minutes to like buy booze and hit the road, or
but you get about an hour.
Oh, that's a long.
You get about an hour head start.
You go buy a really big belt and you belt yourself to a tree, and then
you buy a smaller belt.
Bottle
and you belt
of whiskey. Bottle of whiskey
to your hand.
Bong in the other hand, and just hang on, man.
Yeah, you know. So after Winn-Dixie, I went and started working at a Taco Viva. Taco Viva. We heard of that. And then after that, the movie theater was General Cinema.
Wait, didn't we hear that one too?
Did we already hear that?
Yeah.
Wow. Did I tell you about what we did with the with the reusing of the cups? Here's a little customer.
Did we make that one too? We heard that one too.
Man.
All right. I'm running out of fresh material here. I'll go to one customer service. You would ask about a customer service thing. Here's a local.
That was the point. Yeah.
Ghirardelli chocolate. I bought a Ghirardelli chocolate bar with nuts. San Francisco classic treat. Chocolate.
Chocolateer.
It was a bar with nuts, and I opened it up, and there was basically a little kind of maggot wriggling worm inside one of the nuts.
Sure, that wasn't like a Rice Krispie.
It was wriggling. Wow. So I actually
was it a San Francisco maggot though?
What's with you and the wriggling kind of larvae style? If it ain't wriggling, I ain't gonna talk about it.
So I put it in a Ziploc bag. And I mailed it to Ghirardelli, like hoping for some kind of big payday.
Blackmail. Excellent work.
It'd be dead by the time it got there. Unless you poked a hole in the bag.
Shouldn't you keep the bar with it?
The rest of the bar.
I ate around it.
Oh my God! How hungry were you?
And then sent in
the unused portion.
Sent in the third of the bar.
Yeah, the unused portion. Return the unused portion. Yeah.
And, you know.
Just but why do you know that maggot didn't crawl over that little bar inside the wrapper?
Can you have DNA chocolate testing?
They sent me a certificate for a $5 certificate to buy another gear towards another Ghirardelli bar.
Payday.
And a pamphlet that actually warned me about the dangers of storing any sorts of nuts or grain near heat sources. You know, so I guess that's like there was like an informational
pamphlet.
That's so like conscientious for a company to do that, isn't it? In the future, to avoid maggots in your candy bars, we suggest keeping them away from heat.
What was your letter? Do you remember what you...
you know, it was just like...
Dear sirs.
I was outraged to bite into my favorite candy bar only to, you know, pull a wriggling maggot out of my mouth. which I have taken the courtesy of enclosing here.
Yeah. I did what any responsible citizen would do. It's your turn.
Yeah. And so you...
Well, you know, you hear all these stories about, you know, like you think, you know, I mean, and I had no real, you know, hope that I was going to, you think that you might get some kind of like, here's your $1,000 payday for getting the magnet in the bar, but
were
I got
you,
you know,
a
$5.
Were you pleased, like a coupon disappointed for with the $5?
Because that's a system people really milk now with a finger in the chili.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, people say, I saw a rat in my food or whatever, you know.
But were you happy with the $5 coupon or disappointed?
Well, I didn't really want to eat another Ghirardelli chocolate bar with nuts, like, even though I didn't finish most of the candy bar, the offending bar.
Did you send it back? Did you send
it hilarious to eat the rest of it?
No, he doesn't want ones that presumably don't have maggots. It seems to me you could have sent it back and said, "Well, could I get the cash instead?" Could you send
have
a $5 bill?
Have you ever eaten a Ghirardelli candy bar since?
I never have.
Yeah. Really?
See, that's the ultimate damage there. The company just lost one.
So they handled it wrong. All right. Well, my story is. It's a shipping story. I had a film show up in Portland a number of years ago, and I packaged some film prints up to send up there and sent it via courier. I guess a courier that shall not be named, though they favor the color brown. And, you know, a week and a half goes by, and of course, the package goes missing. The guy who I sent it to calls me up. It's never arrived. So I call the courier, and they immediately put a trace on it, and they get back to me really quick. And I think sort of the funny thing about this story is the courier actually, from a customer service standpoint, they did very good customer service, but I think I end up being sort of the irate customer who, you know, nothing's good enough for. So they put a trace on the package. Call me back a couple hours later, and they're like, "Well, we've got some good news and the bad news. The good news is we delivered it. The bad news is we delivered it to some address in Healdsburg, California. And if, again, geography-wise, Portland's about a 10-hour car ride. Healdsburg is about 90 minutes by car. So they delivered it to the completely wrong place. And they're like, "Well, we'll send someone out there, and we'll try to get the package back." So, you know, about a week later, they call me back. You know, we've sent a guy out there every day. These people are never home. So, you know, you can kiss the package goodbye. We'll send you the insurance money. And I had insured the package for $500, which was the cost of replacing the prints. And I was actually pretty surprised. I feel like places like this, they'll do anything not to pay you. They'll drag these things on for months to get out of paying you. And I was actually shocked that so quickly they're like, "Oh, you know, who should we send the check to? What's the address?" And the thing was, the prints that I had sent up were Super 8 film prints. And at this point in my life, there's no way I would replace those prints with Super 8 prints. Just too prohibitive. And so for me, it's like, well, I mean, I'll get new prints and it will cost me $500, but these films will never again show in Super 8 the way they were intended to be seen. So the prints actually had this sort of sentimental value. And I'm like, I don't want the money. You guys, you go out there and you get those prints. You know where they're at. I don't care if you have to send a guy out there every day for the next month. You dropped it off once. You can go back and you can get those prints. And I think they were shocked that I wasn't willing to take the money.
Wow. So another playing hardball, Dan.
I was playing hardball. Another week goes by, like, "Look, we can't get the prints. These people are never home." I'm like, "I don't understand. They signed for the package once. Well, we actually just left it on their porch. They never signed for the package." And that's why I get ballistic. I don't know how much of my life I've spent having to go down to your damn office to pick up my packages. You never leave packages on my front porch, you know? And they're like, "Well."
So on the other line, they're like, "All right, we got a live one here." Yeah. Some guy's freaking out about some movies or something. I don't know what it is.
And so, like, I'm not having any of it. I'm like, "You get those packages. You keep going out there." I'm like, "What's the address? Healdsburg? I'll drive up there. I'll case the joint, you know?" And so they give me the address. I'm like, "Have you tried writing a letter to these people?" Like, "We'll pay you the $500. Like, I don't want the money. So they give me the address. And I actually had contemplated driving up there, which I didn't do. But I sent them a letter. "Hi, I'm a filmmaker, and this package was sent to you. And I know it's a real pain for you to have to resend them somewhere." You know, another week goes by. The courier keeps calling me. "Can we please pay you?" And I'm like, "No, I'm refusing to let this thing end." And at some point, I get a letter from this woman in Portland, and it's this crazy letter. She's like, "Yeah, I live in Portland, and I was visiting my parents in Healdsburg, and this package arrived, addressed to an address in Portland. And the strange thing is, I live on the very block that was addressed to. And she's like, I hate these courier people. They always get things wrong. So I decided I'm going to take the package up to Portland and hand deliver it for you. But then it all kind of falls apart because I'm kind of an idiot. And when I address the package, I put the wrong address on it. So if it is being shipped to like 900 Clinton Street, I put 901. And the address that I put down was an address that didn't exist. So she gets up to Portland and trying to deliver this package. It's an address that doesn't exist, and she doesn't know what to do. There was a return address. She could have sent me a letter, but whatever, you know. So anyway, she eventually gets this letter from Healdsburg and sends me a letter. Didn't call, whatever. I put my phone number, didn't email, put that in there, sends a letter. But then all of a sudden I realize this is it. I've hit pay dirt because I can call her up, get her to deliver the package. The courier will never know. I could demand my $500 and get the $500 and the film prints. This is like a bohemian's wet dream come true. It's the ultimate scam.
I'm quitting my job and just starting the UPS stuff.
Just to the wrong ass.
Just shaft them every month.
Yeah, if they lose three things a week, I'll be sad, man.
And so she then delivers the package for me. I call UPS. I'm like, this is it. You people are impossible. This has gone on long enough. Give me my money. And then the guy's like, well, you know what? I'm going to call the receiver one more time just to make sure the package hasn't arrived. And I'm like, all right, fine. You do that. I hang up. I call the guy the package was going to. And I'm like, all right, here's what's going down. Someone's going to deliver you a package with the films today. The courier is going to call you. You deny receiving the package. Left a message, of course. 2 hours later, the courier calls up. Well, I called them and they said they got the package today. And I'm like, ah. The great plan scuttled.
But the good news is, this is the plot of the next Tom Hanks movie.
With Anne Heche.
Yeah. It turns out the lady accidentally got the package. They fall in love, and it's really awesome. They don't get along at first, though.
Yeah.
You know, it's like,
and oh, Danny is written out of the movie very early on. Like the first 5 minutes.
Who's the courier? Is it the courier? Goes to the house every day, starts leaving little love letters for the people who won't return the calls. It's playing hard to get.
It's one of those things where like they're always mad at each other until the third act, and then suddenly he turns the UPS truck around. Starts barreling down to her house. No way!
The music rises, you know, power punk. Yay, ballad.
You can't marry Jeremy Piven. No!
You've been listening to the Nest of Vipers podcast. For more information on the show and to leave feedback, check out our website, www.nestofviperspodcast.typepad.com. Also, you can check out movie clips of the music, movies, and other cultural references we make at our YouTube channel, www.youtube.com/Nest of Vipers Podcast.